Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning, Jack Chambers, Minister for Public Expenditure, Infrastructure, Public Service Reform and Digitalisation, and also Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin West. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you for coming into the studio. First today, Mary Lou McDonald said in the Dáil this week that butter is around a fiver. Shampoo is heading for a tenner. The weekly shop, €260 for many people. But the argument is that you mightn't understand the impact of that because politicians have had a pay rise to cushion the blow of grocery inflation. Now, we were talking about this issue on the programme this week, and given the reaction that we had to that conversation, it's hard not to agree with that argument.
Well, what I would say is, first of all, I acknowledge that for many people across our communities in Ireland, there are still challenges when it comes to the cost of many areas of their daily week, whether it's their shop or indeed the prices are still high. And I acknowledge that. What I would say,
it's not just that they're still high; they're still going up.
They are in certain areas of the economy. Overall, inflation has moderated though. So if you look back 2 or 3 years ago, inflation was up to 8, nearly 10%, and government responded to that. And over the past 3 years, over €10 billion of temporary interventions were made to try and cushion that impact. What we are saying in the context of this new government is that both myself and Minister Dunhuigh are working on a medium-term fiscal plan. And within that, thankfully, we still expect economic growth, notwithstanding the broader international challenges that we have. And that gives us capacity to make supportive decisions in the context of improving living standards, driving better outcomes around public services, and investing in the future prosperity and growth of our economy. And what we're saying is that we're going to do that within budgetary parameters, which we'll set out in the summer economic statement. And that's about utilising our social protection system to support many people who are feeling pressure and also workers across our economy,
right, but come back,
and supporting
come back to
improved
the,
living standards.
Come back to the issue of the pay rise. And it has been brought up in the Dáil this week, as I said. It has been mentioned here to us by listeners who've got in touch with the programme. Was there a discussion at cabinet level that perhaps you shouldn't take that pay rise?
So the ministerial or pay or TDs is solely connected to the public service pay agreement, which is TDs is connected to the principal officer scale. And that's something that has been separate to political decision making for many, many years. And indeed, many public servants across our economy are seeing the outcomes of the public service pay agreement. But we are cognizant of the pressure that families face. And that's why when we shape the budget, a progressive focus is what will be my central focus in how I shape the overall medium-term expenditure framework, in how we make decisions, how we target the overall increases and supports that we'll give to families and workers across our economy.
Yeah, but do you accept the argument that if your pay goes up, you don't notice that butter goes up at the same time, or that your utilities are going up, or your car insurance has gone up, because your cushion is there?
I canvass regularly. I meet constituents. I run constituency clinics. I know the pressures that many families and workers face. And indeed all my colleagues do. We're after having a general election. I'm very much connected to my community, and that's reflected in the work that I do every day to try and make progress on living standards. And that's how we shape the priorities that we'll set in the budgetary context.
But it has been said in analysis that because the election is passed, that's why there isn't going to be any help when it comes to utilities and groceries.
Well, no, the context around that is actually was the inflationary cycle. So government responded to a serious cost of living crisis and an inflationary impact, which was nearly at 10% in 2022, 2023, and we responded back to that. What we're saying is that the budgetary package for 2026 will be expansionary. It will involve improved supports, targeted interventions in terms of public services, improving living standards, protecting jobs, and trying to make decisions to improve infrastructure delivery and housing. What we're saying is that that will be done in the context of a medium-term fiscal plan, which has now been adopted at a European level.
And I see what you're saying, but you also seem to be ignoring the fact that inflation is at 10% when it comes to the staples that people have to buy. And if you're on a lower income in particular, that's taking a larger share of your household income.
And that's why the interventions we make around the social protection package and the decisions we make around the overall budgetary package we'll be cognizant of that. What we've said is we want to move away from one-off temporary measures and target permanent and sustained improvements, particularly in the areas like child poverty, for example, addressing disadvantage when it comes to, our education system. We're at a point where we will have an expansionary budgetary package, but it will be done within fiscal parameters so we can make sustained improvements to people's lives.
What about limited price controls? The Consumers Association is calling for that when it comes to things like dairy. Is that something you think the government should consider?
No, I mean, we have the CCPC and structures that are there to monitor the overall market position, but that isn't something the government is considering.
So butter can go over a fiver, it can go beyond six, and the government wouldn't do anything about it.
I think it's about how we assess this in the round in the context of the decisions that we'll make as part of Budget 2026. And government is cognizant of the pressures that families face, but also the expectations that families have in seeing improved and sustained reductions in the cost of public services, for example, which the government responded to over the last number of years. And it's trying to get that balance in the context of overall decision making. And I said I'm engaged every day with the challenges and the pressures families face. And part of putting together the budgetary package is trying to meet those competing demands within an expenditure framework where, thankfully, unlike many other European countries where they're trying to balance their budget, we're continuing to see strong exchequer returns. We're running a budgetary surplus and we want to protect the jobs and prosperity for the future.
So just, and we'll move on from this now, but is there any circumstance where your position on the energy supports, for example, might change this year?
We've said that we're not going to have one-off temporary measures. We want to have a budgetary package which prioritises utilisation, for example, of the social protection system and the safety net that's there and improving living standards.
So that's a no then. You're not going to revisit that.
That's the position of government.
Regardless of what happens to prices over the next couple of months.
Well, we still... So the projections and forecasts on inflation are that it's in and around 2%. Economy-wide, and indeed the future projections on energy prices are quite stable in terms of the future.
That's
the basis upon which we're approaching the budgetary cycle.
Okay, I want to move on to this new Accelerating Infrastructure Task Force, because I know you're going to be chairing the first meeting of that tomorrow, and the aim is to unlock the barriers delaying major projects. Mm-hmm. There'll be 12 people on it, experts from commercial semi-states and members of those organisations as well. Now, given the recent controversy with Brendan McDonagh, we better clear this up straight away. Are those people being paid to be on the task force?
So the CEOs of the commercial state bodies are already paid. So they're being brought into the task force in their roles in terms of their ex officio roles. And then we've six independent members who have extensive experience, insights and expertise, and they'll be paid a stipend of about €7,000 per year, which is standard on anyone who would involve themselves in a government structure.
So are you hiring any person to lead that task force on a full-time basis?
I'm chairing the task force and trying to drive direction and coordination and centralised delivery of key infrastructure across our economy. And just to give your listeners a sense of what we're doing around this, I've heard the general frustration that exists both in industry, amongst the public, and indeed amongst commercial and public utilities around the blockages, the delays, the constraints, the administrative burdens, all of which are impeding infrastructure delivery in our economy. And the focus for the next number of weeks is to identify all of those areas which are causing delays and are contributing to the infrastructure deficit. So out of that, we want to progress a high set of actions, which is to drive reform in this area. And that will be overseen by myself. And we expect a report on the barriers to infrastructure delivery by July. And then thirdly, the role of the infrastructure task force out of that will be to oversee and ensure accountability and change the systems that are contributing to excessive delays and the infrastructure deficit that we have.
Okay, well, that'll be interesting in the context of the big projects that are coming up, but also because Peter Walsh, CEO of Transport Infrastructure Ireland, recently said that they need multi-annual funding over a time frame of 10 years. Is that something that you can countenance doing?
So, and Peter Walsh actually and Transport Infrastructure Ireland have seconded a senior person into the infrastructure division. So in addition to the task force, we've got key personnel have been seconded centrally so that we really coordinate this and we're forensic around identifying the barriers and driving the change. So in addition to the task force, I've commenced a review of the National Development Plan. And the National Development Plan review allows us to provide the additionality, and we're prioritising transport, water, energy and housing within that new envelope that'll be available. And what we want to do is give much greater certainty to Transport Infrastructure Ireland, to Irish Water and to some of the public utilities so they can plan their bigger projects, and also to give certainty to parts of the construction sector who will be there to partner with them in delivery of those projects.
That means multi-annual funding, doesn't it?
It means giving much greater certainty and around multi-annual position, and that's what we want to see achieved through the National Development Plan, which we're developing.
Well, another barrier identified by the Uisce Éireann boss, Niall Gleeson, he said environmental objectors to infrastructure projects are costing the taxpayer billions, stopping young people from buying homes. He described it as bananas. That's something you'll have to smash through, isn't it, in order to get things moving?
I think it's a huge issue and we need a much more balanced approach around the respective interests that exist on this. I think the Planning and Development Act, which is being commenced, will make an impact on the overall life cycle of a project in terms of the planning system and some of the delays that exist. But we do need to balance the respective interests which exist, and in too many instances, very narrow concerns are superseding the broader economic and social objective, and he's correct in his assessment.
So will this task force address that, dealing with objectors causing years of delays?
There's a blank canvas in terms of what's contributing to the delays in the project life cycle. Some of it is administrative and some of it is directly within our control and changes we can make quickly. Other elements, I think, will see an improvement around the Planning and Development Act. That is the biggest piece of planning reform in the history of our state. That'll be commencing over the coming months. I think that will see improvements. Also, with the fact that An Bord Pleann Uaile is now better resourced with increased staffing, that will help. So I think all of those combined measures will help counterbalance the issues we've seen over the last number of years.
Okay, Metrolink and the new boss of Metrolink, Dr. Sean Sweeney, had an interview with Daniel Murray in the Business Post at the weekend, and he said a number of remarkable things in the interview. He thinks the project, which we think is going to cost nearly 10 billion euro, he says it'll go at least 20% over budget. Internationally, big projects like Metrolink go 40% over budget. I mean, this is the person tasked with heading it up. Is that what you expect is going to happen here with Metrolink?
Well, I think we need to make sure in any mega project, and that's why that is going through, it's obviously the planning process, and indeed in parallel, they're working through the governance and the structures that would oversee such a project as it evolves through the government process that's there. But I think we need strengthened governance and controls and value for money considerations as such a project develops.
He's saying you have to expect, because internationally big projects like this go 40% over budget.
Mega projects carry risk, and he's correct in his assessment.
But would you tolerate that if you're told it's going to cost X and it costs 40%
over
that?
We'll have to assess the competing demands that exist in the context of the overall envelope. But I think there's extensive work ongoing between my own department and Minister O'Brien in the Department of Transport on how the governance would work in the context of Metro and indeed the overall financial context around that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he said it's going to very likely miss its completion date of 2035.
Well, it has yet to come through the planning system. We're awaiting that decision, and whenever it does, that'll inform the next steps for government about what's possible and what the timelines would be. Mm-hmm. But again, it has had a very circuitous route over the last number of years, and again, the planning system has been a contributor to its delay.
Well, he, in that interview, he really lays bare what the challenges are. I mean, talking about the domestic construction capacity being nowhere near enough to build Metrolink, so we have to look to the international construction market. He says that the international construction market isn't sure about the project because it's been cancelled once. The government looks like it's been treating this as a business as usual project, which it's not. International firms look at that, he says, and ask, are we going to spend money and effort chasing this or not? So how do you change that perception of what we're doing here? People aren't sure if we're as good as our word.
Well, I would say is that we've appointed Dr. Sweeney himself as a project lead on a significant salary with a team being built around him through Transport Infrastructure Ireland. And that's a very clear signal and direction about the seriousness in which government takes the metro project. Mm. There is a need to build confidence.
But it sounds like he thinks he's going to have a problem selling that confidence message to the international construction companies he might need to bring in.
To be fair, and this is part of the broader issue, is that the nature of how capital has been allocated in Ireland has been quite haphazard for decades. In times of economic contraction, there's been a significant drop off in our capital allocations. And part of what we're trying to do in this economic uncertainty, but at a point of economic strength, is to give real confidence to the broader construction sector about the government's commitments to key priority areas in transport and energy and water, in housing, so that the construction sector can ramp up capacity and we can build confidence around what we want to deliver and when. And he's correct in saying that obviously when a project gets cancelled and there are only a limited number of international consortiums who build such projects, they obviously assess Ireland
based on the historical context. But you'd have to be saying to them, no, we are committing multi-annual funding to this. And if it does go 20% or 30% or 40% over budget, we're still with this project.
Well, that's part of the... Well, that will be part of any negotiation about what type of contract government would enter into. And that will be obviously subject to commercial oversight and governance being an important component around that. But again, that'll be part of decision making once the metro project comes out of the planning system, and indeed what the project life cycle looks like in terms of the series of years it would take to build such a project.
He's also, Dr. Sweeney, unsure, it would seem to me, given what he said to Daniel Murray, of the government's commitment to this. He said if it was really important to the Prime Minister, it was made clear in his experience in Australia or New Zealand, it was made clear to the whole of government, remove the barriers, make this happen. And there's certainly not that sort of unilateral clearing of the barriers here. He means here in Ireland.
Well, that's why we have, that's the work I'm undertaking. That's why I'm chairing this task force tomorrow, and it'll be meeting monthly to fundamentally deal with the barriers, the constraints, the silos and the systems which contribute to endless delays. And that programme of reform is as important to your question about what the budgetary cycle will be. Mm-hmm. Because for too many projects aren't caught by an issue of capital allocation. They're caught because they're stuck in a process which doesn't necessarily add value in certain circumstances.
Right. He's really putting it up to you. Is he stepping out of line there in what he's saying?
I one thing I've said to all my officials and indeed the public utilities and the agencies and anyone I've engaged with is I want people to be honest around reform, about what we need to do to remove barriers. I think it's good to have a provocative zeal of reform and honesty from public servants and indeed from people in the private sector. And as in my new ministerial role, I want to make the decisions and change the direction to really drive coordination and change to how infrastructure delivery happens across the Irish economy. That's the acid test for me, and I want to make the changes that are required to really build confidence in this so that the construction sector sees the pipeline that's coming, and indeed when they see that come through whatever process is in place, they can get on with delivering
it.
And in too many instances, things are caught in silos or in endless processes, which just brings uncertainty. Okay. And that's part of what I'm trying to change.
So what are you going to do about the bill now that we're looking at for the maternity hospital? I mean, when that's all started with James Riley, the estimate was 150 million, now 2 billion. Can you commit to that? I mean, is that what it's going to cost?
So we have a major projects advisory group which assesses the value for money considerations for any particular project, and government will have to make a decision on the allocation for some of these projects. What I would say though is in terms of investment in healthcare and healthcare capacity, you know, yes, projects require significant investment, but the ultimate yield and benefit for patients and communities over decades sees improvements across our health system.
But did we not say with the Children's Hospital, we have to go ahead with this because we're so far down the line, but it is too expensive, no, it should never have cost
that's
that.
Why,
but we're going to do it again.
Well, that's why we've got interventions within the Major Projects Advisory Group who work with respective departments on the value for money considerations, and so that there's an actual evaluation of how how projects are progressing, what the design context is, what the cost escalation might be, and I have to that's yet to report to me in terms of where that will be, and the government will have to make a decision.
Will you accept a price tag of 2 billion on that hospital?
I'm not going to get into speculating on a price tag about any particular project, except to say value for money considerations are really important. And when we invest in a particular project, obviously there are trade-offs and choices around the overall envelope that exists. And
but you're not ruling it out either. You're not saying are not going to spend 2 billion on a maternity hospital.
So government, both I and the government have to evaluate what the price dynamics might be with the particular project you've referenced. And when I'm fully informed of that, government will consider it and make a decision, and obviously be very transparent and public about what the different cost components might be, and reference the various you know, components which are updated in the context of the Major Project Advisory Group.
Minister, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for coming in, Minister Jack Chambers there. Now, coming up next, Volodymyr Zelensky has just landed in Ankara in Turkey for those talks about a ceasefire in Ukraine, but there's no Vladimir Putin and there is no Donald Trump. We'll bring you the latest after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.